Hello, and welcome to a special podcast and a first look at the report of the Commission on Inclusive Education. Today, we're going to hear from the three commissioners who've spent the last year looking at this issue. They've been consulting with teachers, families, and students around the province and researching best practices in education. And now they've formulated a vision for how to improve the way Nova Scotia delivers inclusive education. First of all, I'm Pauline Dakin. The Commission asked me to do an independent and non-political interview to share their findings and recommendations. I'm a longtime journalist, former national reporter and producer for the CBC, and now a professor of journalism at the University of King's College. I have read the report, and oh, I have lots of questions. So let me begin by introducing the commissioners first. Adela Njai is the Nova Scotia Teachers Union representative on the commission, and she's an instructor with the Department of Education at St. Francis Xavier University. Monica Williams is the government appointee to the commission. She's a teacher, a speech-language pathologist, and an administrator. Dr. Sarah Shea is the independent commission chair, co-appointed by government and the Nova Scotia Teachers Union. She's a specialist in developmental pediatrics at the IWK and a professor in the Department of Pediatrics at Dalhousie University. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's been quite a year, I bet.
It has.
Sarah, this report, I think, is encouraging people to move beyond the idea of special ed. So to start with, what are we talking about when we say inclusive education?
You're right that this is asking everyone to look beyond what was previously framed as special education. Inclusive education in the model that we're recommending is essentially making sure that the education system fits the needs of every Nova Scotia student. So it is offering a range of services and programs that are designed to fit the child, to fit the strengths, fit the needs.
So kids that we would have thought of as special needs, but also kids who may be gifted and everybody in between.
Absolutely. And if we look at the Nova Scotia population, in fact, roughly 22% of students have in the past had one or more adaptations or IPP. So we know it's a lot of students who in fact need that inclusive approach.
Okay, we're going to talk more about what that looks like, but I just want to lay some groundwork. Adela, this is the first substantive report on inclusive education in Nova Scotia in decades. How would you describe what exists now in the province?
What we have at the moment is a program planning process, and this allows teachers to be able to identify students and also make sure that we have in place programs to meet their needs. Their adaptations, their IPPs. The challenges are the paperwork that it would take to make sure that the students are getting direct instruction. The challenge with the specialists, enough specialists that we do not have in the system. Also about the funding, a funding based on enrollment versus needs. So these are some of the challenges that the current system is facing.
Is it too dramatic to say it's a system in crisis?
I wouldn't say it's a system in crisis. What I would say is consistently what we have heard is we need improvement. And I think that is what the focus of our work has been on.
Monica, can you talk a little bit about how you've gone about doing the research, gathering the information, and coming up with this new vision?
So we've collected information from a variety of sources. We've met with Nova Scotians in public workshops. We've worked with university researchers to look at best practices, what's happening across Canada and around the world. We've also looked at all the policies and the funding mechanisms for inclusive education in every province and territory. And we did online surveys. We invited written submissions. We met with stakeholder groups. So from one end of the province to the other, we met with Nova Scotians, and very importantly, we visited schools.
How many consultations and submissions and presentations do you think are represented in this report?
More than 5,000 Nova Scotians responded to our call, and there was tremendous interest in our work, and we had a very positive response everywhere we went.
I know people are very anxious to hear about it. So, Sarah, you're recommending a new model using what you call multi-tiered systems of support, or MTSS. What does that look like?
It's a model that works at potentially three levels. There is a core curriculum, which is there for all students, and the core level, the tier one as it's framed in the report as you read about it, will meet the needs of 80 to 90% of students. But what we know is that there will be students who will have needs that need to be addressed in other ways. So it provides a second tier, which offers various types of smaller group intervention, and then another tier that's for more intensive, individualized interventions as needed for students.
I was amazed reading the report. We're really talking about massive changes across the system. So some of what you recommend is a dozen new school psychologists, 30 new behavioral support teachers in elementary schools, a dozen new regional school nurses, another $5 million to address complex classroom needs, new training for teachers and teachers' assistants and other professionals. That's not even the complete list, right? There's $15 million earmarked in the budget that just came down to go towards this. And I know there's a promise that there could be more if that's not enough. But what do you think reasonably is an estimate of what it's going to cost to do this right?
One important thing to know is, particularly when looking at the $15 million that's been set aside, is that we have very deliberately created a plan that is incremental. It's incremental in terms of developing the model, implementing the model, training, recruiting the specialists that are needed. It's incremental in terms of the funding. So the $15 million for the first year is, in fact, a good start because we can't do all of this at once. That just doesn't make any sense. Fully implemented over 5 years, we're looking at about a 7.5% increase on the education budget, which we need to appreciate is roughly $1.1 billion. So in the neighborhood of $70 to $80 million eventually with this fully implemented.
Do you feel, and I'll ask all of you, do you feel that there is the political will to get behind this kind of a transformation and follow through on it?
You're looking at a trio of pragmatic optimists, and we would not be doing this, we would not be proposing this if, first of all, we didn't completely believe that it's the right thing to do, and secondly, believe that it's what Nova Scotians want, and I do think this is doable, and I do think that the commitment of Nova Scotia is there, and hopefully, we'll also see that translate into the commitment of the government. I know they've been keenly interested in this process.
This isn't a change in special education. This is the change of public education. That's what it is, for the betterment of all students. And we felt very strong support throughout our public consultations for the work. And we heard loud and clear from Nova Scotians in many quarters that they want change. And not tweaking around the edges, but major change. And so we feel that there's strong support in that regard from the public. And we certainly anticipate a similar level of support from government.
Mm-hmm. I think it's more than political. I think we've been waiting for this for quite a while. It is the public will. And I think that is what's going to bring about the change.
So this model has been used in other jurisdictions around North America. How well is it working in those other places? What were you able to find out, Monica?
So one of the things we did in terms of gathering information for the model was we partnered with university researchers from School of Education here in Nova Scotia, and we asked them to investigate key questions. And the main question was, where is inclusive education working well, and how is it working? And when they looked into that and looked at other education systems, one of the things they found was that those systems offer multi-tiered systems of support. So it's a feature of education programs that are being successful in including students. So we looked at that, and then from there we looked at other jurisdictions right across the United States and Canada to see how it was being implemented. But the important piece of that is, even knowing that from the research, that it's successful, it's evidence-based, there's research to back it up, we really had to look closely at the Nova Scotia context and say, what can we take from the other models and bring here to make it our own? Because we know from experience that simply bringing in something from somewhere else and applying it in our province doesn't necessarily work.
Where were the places that you were able to find that seemed to have it all together?
We looked at Northwest Territories model. We looked at Saskatchewan, which has brought in multi-tiered systems. We looked at Massachusetts, Florida, Kansas, Iowa. We looked at references where there were case studies from different locations that talked about how it was implemented and what the successes were. So broadband.
Mm-hmm. I want to drill down a little bit to talk about really what is this going to look like. Adela, you mentioned, you know, that there are these IPPs and these ways of managing education for students with special needs that have been very time intensive for teachers. What are you recommending instead?
The what we have recommended is we're going back with the three tiers, and I'll give you an example. Take a student who comes into school and that they have behavioral challenges. So if we take that student, some of them are not able to self-regulate, to stay in the classroom, to be able to do math or science. So some of the strategies that we would have in place is, okay, what do we need to do on an individual level for that student to meet their needs, which is teach them the skills to be able to not maybe exhibit the behavior. Then you transfer from a small one-on-one to a small group. How do we make sure that when the behavior manifests, we are able to work with that student and give them the skills? And then sometimes they're in the classroom. So constantly they're doing working at all three levels, making sure they're having the appropriate programs, they're having the appropriate settings, and that the appropriate interventions are in place. That's what it would look like.
So, Monica, we know certainly that teachers have been frustrated by paperwork, and they don't necessarily feel qualified or trained to deal with some of the behavioral issues and the emotional problems and so on that are, I think, more and more common in classrooms. How will a move to MTSS change things for teachers?
It will provide more support for teachers. So the emphasis in MTSS is on the classroom, on the core curriculum and core instruction, and making sure that teachers have the education, the time, the resources to offer the very best in curriculum to their students. It's also the case in MTSS that specialists come into the classroom to provide direct support to students and to assist teachers with programming in areas like behavior, reading, language development, a whole variety of skills. With teacher education for MTSS, there's an emphasis on providing the teachers with strategies, proven strategies that are research-based on how to deliver the curriculum, how to differentiate their lessons so they meet diverse student needs and interests, how to provide assessments that really give a true appraisal of where students are in their progress. And very importantly, teachers are taught how to continuously monitor student progress because MTSS is a prevention system. It's really focused on early identification and intervention of any learning struggles that a child has as soon as they appear. And so teachers are provided with that training as well.
And so that works hand in hand with getting kids into the system earlier at age four, I guess, for early identification of issues?
It's a very good fit.
Sarah, the report talks about behavioral and mental health issues as priority areas, and there are such long wait lists to see, for example, a school psychologist if the position is filled, and I think there are some that aren't, and even the IWK has empty positions, I know. How do you fix that problem to make this work?
There are two components to the problem, as you described it. I'm going to address what I think is the core question, which is how do you get enough staff there? It's a complicated equation because you're right. Sometimes positions exist and you can't fill them. And sometimes the issue is that there aren't positions and there simply aren't enough people to go around. So this needs to be addressed at multiple levels. It needs to be addressed with increasing the supply. And for that, we need to look at the preparation of specialists. Psychologists are just one example. We have an undersupply of a number of specialists in the province. We need to look at attracting people to positions by having positions that people want to have. And while part of that at times can be looking at the remuneration, often it's looking at what's the caseload, what are the supports available for that individual. We need to take into account that positions where you have to travel a lot are going to be different from other ones, and that creates sometimes inequities, rural versus urban. So we need to look at having jobs that people are trained for, having jobs that are funded and people know will be there, and having jobs that people will stay in because they're doable. We know that full-time or at least half-time positions are generally more desirable for people, and they want jobs that are going to be permanent. So we need to bring them in that way and not fragment specialist positions over multiple people. We need to make sure people have the training they need to feel competent in their jobs.
Mm-hmm. What role might the universities, for example, be playing in all of this, getting people ready?
They have a huge role to play. And what's actually been exciting for us in the process of the commission is to see how by simply having everyone collectively asking the right questions, we've already started to hear some problem solving happening. So the deans of the schools of education have been brought together to look at some of the core issues, whether it's BED training, the Bachelor of Education program, improving that to improve teacher skills, creating more pathways to specialist education, more programs. NSCC, we need them on board as part of it as well, because of course they're training teacher assistants, and we need a communication disorder assistant program here in the province. So the universities have a huge role.
Mm-hmm. And I should ask you this question, because I know you have expertise in the area of autism spectrum disorder, and this report does focus on that.
Yes, one of the things that we're calling for is an autism strategy for the province, with a particular focus, obviously, on school. Absolutely. The prevalence of autism in our province is 1 in 68 at the last statistic I saw. And we know that it is one of the issues that we need to sort through and make sure we're doing the best thing for children and youth with autism.
So what should families with children on the spectrum be watching for?
They should be looking for an actual widespread strategy so that we have the right assessments and interventions in place. We are looking for more specialists, more training for classroom teachers and how to best support students with autism spectrum disorder. We're looking for more interagency collaboration around students with autism as well as around other students.
A couple other areas I want to touch on. One is this idea of interagency collaboration, getting departments to cooperate, not just Department of Education, but community services and others. What are you saying about that?
Let me give you an example. The best thing that we can do for students is when we are prepared to receive them in the schools. And I have worked on various program planning teams where the IWK was at the table and the teachers and the parents, and we had a transition plan in place for the students. And I tell you, it works perfectly. When those plans are not in place, sometimes it creates more challenges for the students. So it takes them a longer time to acclimatize to the school. And so those interagency collaborations are paramount to this model.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of attention paid within the report to how do you successfully implement such a big change. Monica, what are the plans that would push this forward and make sure it's happening in the right way?
One of the biggest things is to recognize the complexity of it, and that there are so many moving parts and changes to public education. The other thing we looked at that was part of our mandate was the alignment of change initiatives, because we know right now a lot is happening in our school system in terms of the leadership structure. There's a new updated provincial curriculum coming. There's math strategy, literacy strategy. So we tried to come up with a system in MTSS that would accommodate and align all those changes. So that was one part of implementation. We've also developed 5 stages of implementation over a 5-year period and outlined key steps in the process to give signposts along the way as to the steps to be taken to implement the plan. It's incremental, as Sarah said, so the plan builds over time. So you'll see, for example, things like this. Every year there would be additional specialists hired in positions as we have more people trained and more people available. We'd be building supports around mental health and autism and behavior as the different specialists come in place and we have more programs for students. And so it builds over time to the point where the model is fully implemented. But we know from experience that one of the biggest things that guides implementation in the schools on the ground level, where the change really happens, is the lessons learned as you go. There are things you can't predict at the outset where we are today with the report. People are going to learn what works well in Nova Scotia classrooms and apply that and adjust the plan.
And who's going to be overseeing this process?
So we've recommended the creation of the Nova Scotia Institute for Inclusive Education as an arm's length body to provide leadership, to oversee research into inclusive education in our province, to provide accountability, and to report to the public on an annual basis as to how the implementation is going and what the outcomes are for students, what's being achieved through the implementation.
Just briefly from each of you, what do you imagine that things will look like in 5 years from now? How will things be different for students and families and teachers in Nova Scotia?
I am hopeful. All those students that were not served, who did not have the opportunity, that would not happen again. That is my hope.
We really talked throughout the report about targeted funding, more specialists for students to access, and better supports for them. So our hope is that the classroom in 5 years' time will be supported by stronger curriculum, teachers will have everything they need to meet the needs of the students in their classrooms, and parents who are full partners in the education system and fully involved in their children's programs.
Yeah, I'd like to know that when I talk to the parent of a four-year-old, and they ask me the question that I often hear now, which is, you know, how is my child ever going to go to school? Is it going to be okay? I'm terrified. That I will be able to say, you know, you don't have to feel that way. It's going to be fine. You're not going to have to fight. The services are going to be there, and to be able to say that with absolute conviction.
Thank you all for talking about the work that you've done over the last year. I'm sure families and teachers are very anxious to see this unroll. I'm Pauline Dakin. You've been listening to a podcast on the report of the Commission on Inclusive Education. And my thanks to my guests today, the three commissioners who have put this report together, which, by the way, is available online. Adela Njai is the Nova Scotia Teachers Union representative on the commission. Monica Williams is the government appointee to the commission. And Dr. Sarah Shea is the independent commission chair, co-appointed by the government and the NSTU. And if you'd like to read the full report, you can find it at inclusiveedns.ca. Thanks for listening.